Boker Tov, and we're holding today on Daf Pei Beit, and we're at the two dots. So yesterday we discussed the case of a gentleman whose brother died in Pumbedisa, and he was going to go and be Miyabin the wife, and he sees that his younger brother wants to stop this Yibam from taking place by throwing a get to the Yivama. So he realizes that his little brother is very upset that he's going to end up, big brother is going to end up taking all of the money. If he goes ahead, he's Miyabin this woman. So he makes a deal with him and he says, listen, don't try to stop the Yibam. Instead, I'll give you half of the property. So what happened was, is that Rabbi Yosef said that he doesn't have any right to give away the property as long as he doesn't give the ksuva. Because remember that Kol Nechasav, for the ksuva. So because of that, even afterwards, when apparently this Tosfos says this must be the case because of the next piece, apparently he backed out of the deal even afterwards. When he was Miyabim and did arrange to have access to the money, he never shared any of it. And it's well known that people from Pumbedisa are very big phonies, because there is a saying that we had in Chulin, that goes, Pumbedita lavayach shani ushpizach. If anybody from Pumbedisa joined your company, then move your home, because basically the guy's already stolen all your information, taken your identity, he's going to come after you, probably murder you in the middle of the night. Anyway, make sure you move your house. Okay, so they had a bad reputation, which explains today's Gemara. So there was another guy, same story, except this time the Yavama wasn't in Pumbedisa, it was in Mata Mechasya. And here too, the younger brother wanted to passel the Yavama by throwing her a get. So this guy told his younger brother the same thing. Look, what are you worried about? I'm going to keep all of the Mechasim. I'll split it with you. Oh, Malay, yeah, I heard about that story. You're going to do the same thing to me like that phony Pumbedisa guy did to his little brother, and I'm going to end up with nothing. I'm too smart for you. Oh, Malay, so big brother says, I'll tell you what, if you don't trust me, Iba'ita plug lachamiyashta. Go make a kinyan on the property right now. So Omar Marba Ravashi Afagabichyasar of Dimi Omrib Yochuna. Omar Khaver Lechum Bishoh Parazuvalotiek Nu Yelokala Lakashloshim Yom Liakashloshim Yom Kanafilo Medit Bagan. Even though the halacha is quoted from Rabbi Yochanan, that if somebody says you can make a kinyan today on my cow, and the kinyan should only be chal 30 days from now. 30 days from now, exactly, even if this para is in the middle of a place where it's not, and this other person's reshus who made the kinyan, makes no difference. Today's mashicha is enough to be kena, and therefore you'd think that the same thing is true over here, that this guy, okay, he gave little brother, it's true that he can't give little brother the property today because he says he doesn't have it, and we said that he doesn't have the right to give it. Fine. So he told his little brother, Bikona it today. And then it's true that I can't give it to you now, but as soon as it becomes available, and I'll go ahead and I'll do the Yibam, or I'll arrange to get the Nechasim, depending on how we pass, because we'll see later. At that point, it will be yours from today. So then I can't pull out of it. You can't accuse me of being like those phony Pumbedisa guys. Notice, of course, I'm sure as you have, that the word of the city, Pumbedisa, reads Puma Badita, which means false mouths, meaning everything they say is phony. So I'm not going to be like these Pumbedisa guy. And therefore, since this is in Mata Mechasya, which means a city you could trust, so therefore everything should be just fine. So Lamaisa, you would think that since Rabbi Yochanan paskins that you could make a kinyan in advance on the guy's para, that would be the same thing over here. He told little bro, you go ahead and you make the kinyan today, and then whenever it becomes available, it will be yours. It'll be too late for me to pull out, right? You think it would work. But it doesn't work. Here it's different because hatam biyado, over there, theoretically, if the guy wanted to give him the parah today and that the Mashiach should be chal today, the Mashiach would have been chal. But in this case, he can't give it today because it's not his to give. And therefore, it doesn't help for the guy to do a Mashiach on something that is bechlal, not this person's. Now, as Tosis points out, there are cases where we have found that you can do that. Like, let's say, you know, you can make a kedushin on a woman who's currently not available. But that, as Tosis explains, is only if you hold that ana makna davar shelo bali olam. But we're not going according to the shita of ana makna davar shelo bali olam. Therefore, if you can't give it today, so then it's no kinyan today at all. So therefore, poor little bro is still out. Wait a minute. Okay, I understand that, but I didn't quite understand what you said about Rabbi Yochanan. You said Rabbi Yochanan said he could be kone today, and the kinyan would be chal 30 days from now. But when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported something totally different. He said that Rabbi Yochanan said that in an event that you did that, lo kone. So which one did Rabbi Yochanan say? Did he say yes or no? No, that's not it. Obviously, it depends. If he used the word me'achshav, in other words, this kinyan that you are doing now is a proper kinyan. I can delay the chalot of the kinyan with a condition. So the condition could be on condition that you go on stage and put on a show. The condition could be that 30 days have passed, whatever it is, but a condition will always define the kinyan. So it's a condition. But if you didn't say kni me'achshav, it doesn't make sense. So what are you saying? Make an act of a kinyan now, but don't make a kinyan. What is that supposed to mean? I mean, an act of a kinyan isn't a kinyan. That's the difference over there, Rabbi Yochanan said. If you never said that the kinyan will be retroactive when it does happen, so then, of course, it's not going to happen. What would be the din if first he did yibum, and then he went ahead and he gave out parts of it to his little brother, to whatever other brothers he had, right? What would be the din over there? So Ula said nothing because he doesn't have a right to it. That's according to the shita that we learned before, which Rabbi Yosef said. Even if he went ahead and did it, since the Chachomim said not to do it, it wouldn't be chav, even b'diavad. Now, what about if chileik v'acharkach? Now, this sounds like a ridiculous question. You just told me that even if he was first Biyabim, and then he went and gave it. Well, obviously, if he wasn't even Biyabim, how could we think that it's going to be more of a gift than it would be if he gave it after his Biyabim? What kind of weird way is asking this kasha? Seems like you're telling me, Chilek v'acharkach yibeim mahu, and we needed to have another psak. Loss of a local. Ask Reb Sheshes, I understand. What's wrong with these people? If you're telling me that even if he did Yibum and then he went ahead and he gave it out to his brother, it's not going to be anything because he didn't have rights to it. So are you need to ask me? Again, like how stupid could you be? That if he first gave it out and then he was Miyabim, what, there's a tzad to say that that's going to be better? Obviously not. No, says the great understand. These are not Gemaras that we're reporting. These are Maisim Shahayu that we're reporting. Obviously, if we had structured this in the Gemara, we would have put it, either we would have just said one, that even if you're Miyabim, V'acharkach, or we would have put it into correct order. But we're not talking about a Gemara here. We're talking about two different Maisim that happened. There was one Maisim where they asked Ula, halakha l'maaser, where a guy was mechalek after, and there was another maaser where a guy was mechalek before, and one didn't know from the other one. So that's all. They're two completely unrelated events. Obviously, it seems crazy now that we're telling it over to you, but at the time, it was fine. Anyway, when Ravin arrived, he quotes Reish Lakish, who simply put it all together. Indeed, that ben yibeim v'acharkach chilek, ben chilek v'acharkach yibeim, lo asav, lo klum, because that would be going the way that Rabbi Yosef had paskin before and said that since he was told not to do it, even if he goes ahead and does it, lo asav, lo klum, and therefore that is in fact lo asav lo klum, and the Gemara itself paskins that this is correct. Ve'ilchata lo asav lo klum. All of this, of course, our specific protection were put into place in order to protect the Yavama. Okay, getting back to the Mishnah. Something very weird in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if he has Perota Mechubarim, the Karka, then it belongs to him. This makes sense? I understand. How in the world could it belong to him? If it was Perot on the Karka, so when the husband died, did he or did he not own those Perot? He did. So that means that the clause in his ketuvah that said, Kol Nechasai Arvoi, included those fruits that were Mechubar on the Karka. So how come all of a sudden, you seem to be confusing this case with the case that we had in the Mishnah about Nichsei Melug. Where over there we had the machlokas, yes, between Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim and the machlokas, what the status is of the perot that grew before, whether they go to the Balik, etc. Remember? So it seems like you got involved in that and you're not realizing that this is a totally inappropriate psak. If they had grown before, they belonged to the husband. If they belong to the husband, they can't change suddenly and belong to somebody else, can they? So didn't he write including whatever perot are on the tree? This makes no sense. Amarish Lakish, you're absolutely right. It makes no sense. And your girsa in the Mishnah is wrong. And it should not say that the perot and mechubarim are his. It should say they are hers because of the fact that in this case, it means, well, why is it coming to discuss it? Because it means we argue on Rabbi Meir, Binogea, money, and so on. That's only because mitaltalin are not meshubadim leksuva. That's what we hold. So if the pears are on the ground, we hold they're not meshubadim because then they're mitaltal. But if it's on the, lying on the ground, but if they're attached to the ground, they're meaning they're still on the tree. So then obviously they're hers because they were his. They were the husband's during his lifetime. And then the Mishnah comes along and teaches us something that has to do with the dinim of Yavama. And what is that? Kinasa, once he takes his Yavama, harei ki ishto l'choldov. She's totally a wife. In what sense? I mean, of course, why not? What do you mean when you say in every sense of the word? L'mai hilchata. Omer Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, don't you remember this back from Yavamas? We explained this Mishnah. This was the lashon of the Mishnah, and we said that the meaning is Lomar Shemigasha Begait, that he can go ahead and give her a divorce just like any other woman. And not only that, but if he changes his mind and wants to remarry her, he can even take her back. There's no need for Chalitza if he divorces her and he does not have a problem of remarriage. Well, let me get that straight. Megarsha Begait. I mean, why not? Isn't that obvious? I mean, what else? No. Take a look at the Pasuk. Because the Pasuk uses a strange language. The Pasuk says that what he should do is, it says, Lo tia ish tame tachutz al izhar, yevama yavo aleha. Now look at this language. Ulekachalo leisha, which would be great if it would stop right then and there, but it doesn't. It says, Ulekachalo leisha veyibma. What do you mean, v'yibma? You just said yivama yavo aleha. So what's the v'yibma? So therefore, I would have thought, oh, so the pasuk is calling her a yivama even after it said lekachalo leisha, which means that she still is in certain ways a yivama and a dayan yibumim rishonim aleha. So that means if he wants to get rid of her, yes, he will need a get, but he will also need to give her chalitza. Because there's something left of her original Yibumim. That's what I would have understood the Pasuk to mean. So Lotiska Lobeget, she would need Chalitza also. Kamash Malan, she is Ki Ishto L'chol Davar. In every sense of the word, including not requiring Chalitza. So what then is the point of the V'yibma? So that we remember from Masechet Yevamot. V'yibma means Ba'al Korcha. And we had other drushes as well. So there were plenty of things that we learned out from that word. It does not mean that adayin yibumim harishonim aleha. Okay. Now, the next thing that you said, I don't understand that. You say that he could take her back. Well, obviously he could take her back. I mean, if you're telling me that you can divorce her and that she's like anybody else, so why wouldn't you be allowed to take her back? In divorcing a woman, I mean, unless you're a Cohen and she becomes a divorcee, but I mean, without that, you can always take a woman as many times as you want. So why not? I'll tell you why. Remember that this woman is really an erva. She was married to your brother. Now, the fact that the Torah says, I'm giving you a mitzvah to marry her anyway. Okay, you did that mitzvah, all right? Now you divorced her. So now it's over. So now she goes back to being what she was before. So she goes back to being a normal Yisrael erva. Kamash malan. That comes to tell us that, no, she's Gishta l'chol davar, even to the extent that Machzira. But wait, Ema Hachinami, maybe that's true, you know? I mean, now that you mention it, it is perfectly reasonable, isn't it? No, that's the reason that the Pusik stresses, Ulekachalo li'isha, he should take her as a wife. Kivanchalikacha, that's what it's telling you. Once he takes her, she is a wife. And Naaseit Kiishto, even that he can take her back. And she's not considered to be an erva anymore. And then, Bilvachitek Tuvata Nechse Baal HaRishon. The only thing that's unique is that if she was a Yevama and he takes her back, then the difference between her and normal wife is that, forget about taking her back first, right? If he takes her as a Yevama, he doesn't have to write her a ksuva. Why? Because the ksuva is still extant from her original husband. So why is that? That's because Ishtel hiknu lo min hashamayim. He was given this woman min hashamayim b'kadosh baruch hu. So if that's the case, why should he write a ktuva? Now listen, gentlemen, there's a very profound implications of this idea. I mean, what is that supposed to mean? And therefore what? Therefore I don't owe her anything? So Rashi's lashon is quite remarkable. Isha hikna lo liyavam ze min hashamayim, ein alav lichtov lashtar nisuin. What the heck? He doesn't have to write a contract for the nisuin. Who's talking about a contract for the nisuin? We're talking about writing a ksuva. How did a ksuva become a contract for nisuin? So you see the most amazing thing here, and that is that there are completely and totally different elements that are involved in the ksuva. One aspect of a ksuva is, in fact, shalote kalabe inavlotzia, and that it strengthens, therefore, the stability of the marriage. But the other thing is that since we have now gone ahead and defined the nature of nisuin, this is even if you hold it to the Rabbanan, Goshekein, if you hold it to the Oraisa, since we have gone ahead and defined the nature of a nisuin, as the Rambam brings the Mishnah, the mitzvah, Likach Isha b'kiddushin u'biktuva. That's the mitzvah. Take a woman with kiddushin and ksuv. That means we've defined the nature of the marriage with the giving of the ketubah. So therefore, something will be missing from the etzem definition of the marriage. Comes along the Gemara. That's why Rashi says, hiknu lo min hashamayim. Why is that important? I mean, if what you're trying to say is, well, since he was forced into it, you can't expect him to also write a ksuva, which is the way many understand it, then why does it say they gave them hiknu lo? I mean, that isn't the point. Ikar chaser min hasefer. Therefore, Rashi understands this in a completely new way. And later on, the Gemara is going to point out, that's all very nice, and it still leaves the door open to, but what if there's no money left in the original marriage? What's going to be with the other aspect of the ksuva? Namely, shalote kalabe navlotzia. That is still a consideration. And of course, if that's the event, he will have to give her a ksuva. Note the different purposes, though. One is to assure the stability. The other is the concept of the nisuin itself. So therefore, the idea over here would be, since Isha iknolo min hashamayim, then that's sufficient. But, now this is interesting, but if there was no property from the first husband, and he ends up dying penniless, so then in that case, he does have to write a new ksuva. Then, itla misheni. But why is that? Why would he have, she still has a ksuva, she just doesn't have any money to back the ksuva up with. But it's not a change in the nature of the kinyan, is it? So why would he have to write her a ksuva now? Ah, that's a completely different issue that remains an aspect of the ktuva that still needs to be taken into consideration when it isn't built into the so-called shtar nisu'in. Okay, now the Mishnah said, he cannot tell his Yavama, there's your ktuva in the bank, in the safe deposit box, and v'chein, he should not say that to his wife either. So what would I mean by saying v'chein? Well, obviously, if you can't say that to your Yavama, why would I think you could say it to your wife? So what's the v'chein? No, because you see, I might have thought, ma'adatema, that for a Yavama, there's a big difference. And what is that difference? Remember, we explained yesterday that in a normal shtar ktuva, what you write is that you will be able to collect from any property that I own currently, and I am mishabed you any karka that I will own in the future. So that means that the woman that he marries is secure. She feels that it's not a particular thing that's backing up the ktuva, and that I'm always assured, insofar as he is financially stable, I'm always assured that my finances are secured as well. But when it comes to Yavama, since he never wrote the ksuva, and the husband, the original husband who did write the ksuva, is dead, so then that means there is a certain body of property that she was relying on to collect her ksuva, and it's never going to be added to. So in that event, she doesn't feel secure. So I would say, okay, that's Davka over there by the Yavama, where if you would write her something like that, she would feel, I mean, if you would do that to her, she would, if you tell her, here's your ksuva in the safe deposit box, she would start feeling very insecure. And because of that, that could create disasters. But where it's your wife, where he did write a normal ksuva, and in that ksuva, it says beferish, all property to Kanoi that I have purchased and any property that I will purchase is Meshubet. So Ema Samcha Da'ata, you might think that, look, the fact that he wants to set aside money in a safe deposit box, it's not going to help him, because if anything happens to that money, I'm still going to have the Shibud and any Karka that he currently has or will connect. So it's not as if he's trying to sell out the property from under my feet. So she won't feel insecure, and therefore it will not create any hard feelings. Therefore, it's coming to tell us that no, it's not true, that she interprets the move as part of her narrative about husbands. She interprets the move as a first step towards getting rid of her. So he's trying to basically make sure that his finances are all set up for the big moment when he throws her out of the house. That's what she thinks. And from that moment on, she becomes a witch and worse. So that's going to destroy the marriage. And that's, we said yesterday, that ends up being the big concern for Baba about Eva and so on. And that's why we looked at this as an Eitz HaTovah and so on. Kamash Malon, and therefore, that's what the Mishnah wants to tell us, that even so, it's a bad move. Okay, now there's another fascinating diuk in this Mishnah that we never really understood before as being provable from the Mishnah. Take a look at the next words. If after he's miyavim her and he gives her a get, then she only has rights to her ksuva. What is that supposed to mean? What would she get other rights for? Obviously, she only has rights to her ksuva. So what is the Mishnah trying to say? I'll tell you. The Mishnah wants us to make a very important diuk, namely, that Yirsha, if he divorced her, then it's true that she only gets a ksuva. But if he did not divorce her, what is it telling you? then he can't sell anything. And that in that case, in a sense, she owns everything. She's got her paws in everything that he owns. So it's telling you, where does she only get the ksuva? That's because it's after the get. But if before that, she's got more than the ksuva. She controls all of the money. And that is basically a clear-cut psak, like Rebbe Abba, where we learned yesterday that according to Rebbe Abba, the only possible thing you can do, if you want to sell the property of your deceased brother and you don't have access to all of those millions because she's controlling them, is to first divorce her. Then you can pay her out the ksuva and then own the property. We never had a clear-cut raya to that, because even though it says in the Mishnah that you cannot tell your Yavama, keep the money in the safe deposit box, remember that we said that that might be because it's considered to be an Eitzah Tova, right? So therefore, we want to find a reason to see in the Mishnah proper a raya to Rav Abba. Ah, beautiful. This diak is really a raya, because otherwise, what's the point? Every idiot understands that once she's divorced, she gets her ksuva. What's she going to go sue for now? All of a sudden, she claims that she has a right to her deceased husband's property? Where would that right come from? The only reason for mentioning it is to point out that it's now and only now that we could say she only gets her ksuva. But before that, she really prevented her new yavam, her new husband, from being able to have access to her husband's estate. And then the last thing, hechazira harehi kechol anashim. Now this is a big chiddush. If you took her back again, she becomes like any other woman. Ve'ein la ela ketuvata. Oh, now this is fascinating. She only gets her ksuva. But every woman only gets her ksuva. I mean, it says that Farish in a different Mishnah that we're going to have a little bit later, is that, and therefore we're asking, so what's the chiddush in this? My kamashmalan. There's a Mishnah later on that says Farish. Hamigareshet ha'isha machzira. Somebody divorces his wife and remarries her. He remarries her with the understanding that the original ksuva, if it hadn't been collected in the interim, is going to be reestablished the way it was. And we just ignore the interim period in which there was a divorce. I'm going to pay you the ksuva and then remarry you. And then, I mean, that's crazy. So if I agree to remarry, it's with the understanding that now the original ksuva goes into effect, right? So it's almanat ktuva rishona machzira. So therefore, isn't it obvious that the same thing is true by the Yavama? Says the Gemara, obvious. It's anything but obvious. I mean, ma'adetema ishtohu, diyukasav laktuva minei. Yes, in the event that he had married this woman originally, then divorced her, now remarried her, the whole definition of the relationship was the way that he married her originally. So therefore it makes sense. He's taking her back. He's taking her back with the understanding that they're continuing the marriage, and that the unfortunate episode of the divorce for the past 35 years is just a passing moment, right? Well, actually, he would have paid the ksuva if it was really 35 years, so I'm exaggerating. But in the event that he hasn't paid the ksuva, so then we're just sort of forgetting the bad blood, you know, and we're going to have the ksuva. Mashen came by the Yavama. The Yavama was a whole different deal. He never wrote her a ksuva, remember? We said that Isha hiknalo min hashamayim, and therefore, if now he's megarish her, and now he's taking her back, so hechad yirshav ahadra, so now at this point, the ksuva should be from him. Therefore, comes along the Mishnah to say, even in that case, kamash malan, that even in this case, it's understood that the ksuva is maintained from the first husband. Now, does this make sense? Doesn't make sense at all. What do you mean the ksuva is maintained from the first husband? But that relationship is over. And the only reason we allowed him to get away with it, we said, was because since the Torah had defined the marriage, and Isha hiknalo min hashamayim, Therefore, Miksuva, in this particular case, as opposed to anywhere else where the nature of a marriage includes Kiddushin and Ksuva, so obviously he's going to have to write a Ksuva. So I understand if he already wrote the Ksuva, you could say, okay, but that Ksuva is good enough. But how in the world do you explain the fact that this woman who was once a Yavama and the Torah gave her to him, and therefore her Ksuva was on the Sebala HaRishon, how in the world does that translate into a case where he divorces her and takes her back again, where he's making the marriage? And if he's making the marriage, then he has to write a Ksuva. So what the heck? I mean, not only should we not have asked why bother saying it, we should have asked why the heck is it true? And this, gentlemen, is an amazing chiddush of the Gemara. And that is, people think when they're remarrying that they're starting over. Well, that's a big mistake. Whatever was wrong the first time is going to be wrong the second time. You are not starting over. The Kiddushin is with the original Ksuva, even in the event that she was a Yavama. And now you're coming back, you're saying, darling, I don't want a Yavama. I want to make you into my real wife. A Yavama is a whole different ballgame. The din is that he's retaking his Yavama. That's astounding. And since he's retaking his Yavama, the Ksuva is still the Ksuva of the Yavama on the original husband. The whole point of his remarrying her in his mind was, let's get my brother out of the picture. You're not getting a brother out of the picture, which is such an incredibly Nogel Maisa issue, which of course you can see all over from the number of cases in which people get divorced twice or three times from the same woman. That's because they didn't learn this Gemara. It's quite amazing. So even at kedei kach, if she were a Yavama, then she's still a Yavama. That, I think, is absolutely, I mean, the Gemara doesn't even consider, you know, that it could be otherwise. You just have to explain the Havamina. Amazing. Omer of Yehuda. So now, as we've mentioned before, the Ksuva was not a one-time takana. The Ksuva was actually something that developed over time. And we've seen some of the issues, the concept of chin that we had before, and what was required, and what made it possible for a Ksuva to actually work. We've seen that even b'meshach hadoros, since the time of the Gemara, even including the time of the Ge'enim and subsequently, changes have occurred in the nature of the Ksuva because of the way that society has developed and made it necessary to create those very important changes, even to the extent of including within the Nusach of the Ksuva, afilu miglimad al-katvoi. Here, we're going to have a little bit of the insight about one of the issues that we bounced back and forth from in trying to ensure the Ksuva. And as we pointed out, a Ksuva is a very delicate balance, because if you overcompensate, then you end up making it impossible for men to get involved in the relationship. If you overcompensate in the other direction, then you make it impossible for women to be psychologically secure. What's more, since there are so many different things involved in the Ksuva, by arranging to be certain about one thing, you can make something else a problem because you forgot to take that into consideration. So, for instance, if you make it very easy for her to collect the Ksuva, let's say you say, okay, we want to really provide for a woman so that she could be completely secure. So what will we do? We will make a clause of the Ksuva that the Ksuva has to be deposited in a safe deposit box that her father has the key to. Now, she knows her father's not going to screw her over, and therefore, she feels secure. So that'd be great, right? No, it would be awful. Why? Because part of the idea of the Ksuva is the psychological distress that the husband will go through in thinking, I hate her. Let me throw her a get. Oh, hell. And then go to court and God knows what's going to. But suppose the money's already set aside in a safe deposit box. I don't have access to that money anyway. Hey, listen here, you witch. go back and get your safe deposit box keys. See you later, alligator. Get out of my life. So therefore, that would mean that in compensating for one thing, that is to say your security, you are destroying the element of the ksuva that is providing a cool-off period at least, which is the necessity of arranging for a ksuva before we're going to get to the get. So that's a very simple expression of the kind of balance that needs to be made between the various factors, not to mention the question of the balance of how much overcompensation we could have in one direction or the other. So this is a wonderful brisa that we're going to have now that's going to tell us more about what happened with the takona that we had. Because the takana that we're aware of Shimon ben Shetach, is the end of a long series of things. We don't even know the number of different local takanas that were made, but there were a few steps that we are aware of historically. So Amar Rav Yehuda, you should know that originally, a ksuva simply consisted of, in the event that I divorce you, I will give you the 200 zuz or the 100 zuz in the case of the almana, with whatever tosefet perhaps, and that's all. But there was nothing in the ksuva proper about how you can collect. Didn't say anything about all of my property is now from this point on pledged to whatever it is that this ksuva. Didn't say anything of the sort. And you know what? People grew old and never could find a wife because nobody wanted to get involved. What should I get involved in marriage for? For what? So that then he should divorce or die on me, and then I'm left hanging and nobody's going to take care of me. I'd rather find somebody that wants me as a lover. So you'll say, oh, you can't trust the lover. Oh, and you can trust the husband, you can't trust the husband either. So the guy's going to go up and die on me, and then his kids are going to take the money, and I'll never be able to collect it. I'll never know where the money is. Forget it. So sure enough, they didn't get married. They would grow old and never, ever find a woman who was ready to marry them. And so at the end, Shimon ben Shetach came along, and he was the one that made it part of the ketuvah that it should say kol nechasai achra'in v'arva'in leketuvah zo. And in the end, that became the kanina v'da'ati ani lemiknoi, and in our days, afilu miglim al katfoi, and so on. All of that complex language is part of the development of generations after the original concept of a ketuvah was instituted and recognized. Tanya Namiyachi, and the Braita says that it wasn't like straight out that we got the Shimon ben Shetach. There were all types of attempts to make this work. So Tanya Namiyachi, Barishona you kutvim lebitula matayim ulaamana mana, v'ahayu maskinim v'loayu nosim nashim. So before the time of Shimon ben Shetach, they came up with a solution. So they said, let's make a takana that the husband should put the money for the ksuva in a safe deposit box where her father has the key. And therefore, there's nothing that is going to happen to it. She doesn't have to worry about his heirs going around and stealing or hiding the money of the ksuva. But that caused another problem, because a dying, kishu ko'es aleha, omer la lachi etzel ksuva teich. So a dying note, that a dying doesn't mean it's the same issue. A dying means that still was no good. That's what it means. In other words, the entire thing was an approach to figuring out what is going to work. So this was not going to work because, and we don't say, but then a new problem came along. That's what I'm trying to be you to. That the word a dying means that we always recognize that we've got many different elements that we have to take care of. And in doing one thing, we were not making a better ksuva. That's the point, ultimately. Better ksuva, which means better underlying infrastructure, relationships, and context for marriage. So a dying, we didn't solve that, did we? Because then kishu ko esaleha, as soon as he would get angry at her, he would say, well, go get your ksuva from your father, you know, because it doesn't cost me anything. I'm not going to have to go around and go to court. So then they said, okay, that's not going to work. So what we should do is we should give the safe deposit key to the husband's father, meaning that it's there in the home, and therefore, since anyway they would originally Even today, it sometimes happens that you move in for the first year with your in-laws, you know, and they provided you with a place. So that way it would be there. And in order that it couldn't be hidden, they made it into something that was constantly in use, and therefore they could keep their eye on it. So let's say if they were very rich, it was a lot of money. So they would make the money of the ksuva into a beautiful silver basket or a beautiful gold basket. And the father-in-law could never hide it because it was always there. If it disappeared, like, how come we're not serving the fruit in my basket? You know, so they weren't able to secret it away. As far as the aniyot, what could they do? They don't have enough money to make something nice. Yeah, but they could always make a chamber pot, you know. And if the chamber pot disappears, I mean, it's a little bit weird. So here's your ksuva. Take the chamber pot. You know, so Tosfos brings that. That's not what it should say. It should say a copper or brass serving platter. There's some say that they made a very expensive chamber pot. It's an astira. But anyway, because the whole point is you want something that if it disappears, it's going to be immediately noticed, and therefore they won't be able to just hide it. But still, even in that event, it still left things that would be easy. So even though this money is now, see, when it's there, why is this different? It does explain it's different because if the access to it is going to be as an actual item, so then he could always ask her whether it would be okay to take a mortgage out on it or to maybe to put it into a pawn shop so that meanwhile they could get money from it and so on. So still, it's not as if it doesn't cost him anything. So in this kind of situation, he would still feel hesitation, but it wasn't enough of a hesitation. He would still say, because since it was identifiable, even though it was easily accessible to him because it was in his family's rishus, it still was a problem. Therefore, we needed to have the takana finally, which gave us the situation that we have today. The ksuva includes a chiyuv on everything, plus remember that we added in even what I'm going to be kona, and even from metaltalin, according to everyone, even if we're not paskening like Rabbi Meir, that a ksuva is chal metaltalin, we made a takona at the time of the ge'enim that it should be chal on metaltalin. Hadran Allah Isha
Bli Neder Funken the Helik of Perik, or an hour later, whenever.
Well, no, it's good to begin, because after all, we would love to have Din Udvarim mainly.
In your recording, Libby?
Not really. I think we would want to have a psak and an ability to start again as a Priya Kadasha, don't you think? But anyway, somebody who writes to his wife, Dinu Dvorim Einli Benichsayich, well, that was where we talked about the contradiction before, that he does still get rights to Peros, to Peros, and the only way he can get out of it is, as the Mishnah says in the end, according to Yehuda, Lo Eilam Alcho Peri Peres, Achi Yichtav Lo Dinu Dvorim Einli Benichsayich, Uberoteihem, Uberoteihem, Ad Olam. Okay, we'll get into the details of this Halakha Mishnah, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow.